Welcome to the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast, formerly known as Chapters of Motherhood. I'm your host, Veronica Moss, and I've returned with an evolved vision. I'm currently in studio passionately crafting brand new episodes set to officially debut in the spring of 2024. We now focus on promoting spiritual growth in all areas of life, including career, relationships, and mindful parenting. While you're waiting for the new season to kick off, why not revisit some of the classics? We've got your favorite episodes from Chapters of Motherhood lined up for your enjoyment. So sit back, relax, and let the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast lead you on a journey of self-discovery and growth. Stay tuned. Welcome to your renewed spiritual sanctuary, the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast. Chapter 5, Mom to a High Needs Baby. Welcome everybody back to Chapters of Motherhood Podcast. I am your host, Veronica, and today is May 29th, 2019, and it's Emily's fifth birthday. So in honor of Emily's fifth birthday, today I want to talk all about Emily, my fourth baby. I had mentioned on a previous podcast about my pregnancy, but today I want to go more in depth. Again, I wasn't working due to a work injury at that time, and so because of that, I didn't have insurance. So I had to apply for emergency Medi-Cal. In California, it's called Medi-Cal. In most of the United States, it's called Medicaid. And for those of you listening outside of the United States, Medicaid and Medi-Cal is the state insurance, the state medical insurance. So with that said, there aren't that many doctors that are that do accept straight Medi-Cal. So when I did find my doctor, he did accept straight Medi-Cal, but he wasn't very warm. He wasn't very friendly, but his staff was. So that kind of made up the difference for me. That and, you know, I couldn't find another doctor. But anyway, he didn't really take my concerns serious. You know, I would tell him that I was fatigued or that I get dizzy and that I was very depleted from my energy. And his replies were very condescending. He told me, of course you're tired, you're pregnant. And then in one of my appointments, I guess I was asking too many questions, I don't know. But he said, you know, why are you asking so many unnecessary questions? This isn't your first pregnancy. So he made me feel stupid for asking questions or for being concerned. So at the time, Sophia was 3 and she was in preschool. And I was just so fatigued that I couldn't even get up and take her or pick her up from school. So my dad really did help me out a lot during that time. He really took on the responsibility because he saw that I was just so fatigued that he would walk her to school and pick her up and really take care of her for me. And my mom used to come in and try to talk to me and I would be falling asleep. Like I just could not keep my eyes open. And my husband also would get very upset with me. Like, why are you falling asleep? I just got home. You've been sleeping all day. And I'm like, you don't understand this. This pregnancy is very, it depletes me of my energy. I'm just very tired and I just couldn't stay awake. So like I said, when I would come to my doctor with these concerns, he was just, you know, of course you're tired, you're pregnant. So didn't really take my concerns seriously. And what he did do though, he had asked me throughout my pregnancy 3 times if I wanted to get my tubes tied. And the first time he asked me, you know, because of your age and this is your fourth baby, are you going to go ahead and tie your tubes? And I said, no, I don't think so. That's not something that I've discussed with my husband yet, but I don't think so. That's not something that I was looking to do. And he said, okay, well, let me know before you're ready to give birth. And I thought, oh, okay. So then on the second time he asked me, I told him no again. I'm like, no, that's not really something that, you know, we want to do because we might want to have more kids. And he told me, you know, because of your age, you know, you're already old. You know, I was 38. He's like, you're already old to be having kids and it could be very dangerous for you. And so again, I told him, you know, I'm not really considering that. You know, my husband and I want to have more kids because, you know, I just started, you know, a whole new family with him. And then the third time he had asked me, this was already, I think I was already like 35 weeks pregnant, or maybe, 30, I'm not really sure. But he got really upset because he started with, some vaccines. He told me that he wanted me to take the DTaP and he wanted me to take the flu shot. And so I told him, first of all, flu shot, no, because I had already had a very bad reaction the first and only time that I ever took it, and I don't ever want to take it again. And the whooping cough one, I just told him, like, I don't really believe in that. I've been told, all the times that I've been pregnant that you shouldn't be, drinking alcohol, taking medication, you shouldn't be eating, you should be limiting your intake on seafood because of the mercury content. And, I just didn't understand that, why they were trying to push these vaccines on me, especially since I knew that they hadn't been tested. As far as I remember, when I was first pregnant with my first two, and well, actually my first three, they told me, these vaccines have not been tested on pregnant women and they're not recommended. So I didn't understand why he was pushing it so much on me. So I told him, no, I'm not interested. So then he went in on the tying my tubes. He said, well, you need to make a decision if you're going to tie your tubes because I need to know before you go into labor. And I told him, I made my decision. I am not tying my tubes. My husband and I are considering having more babies. And he got very angry and like in my face and said, babies are not dolls for you to collect. And I was like, excuse me? Like, first of all, my son is an adult and my daughter is 17. She's almost an adult. And I started a whole new family with this man. And my younger daughter was 3. So we, I was just very frustrated with him that I kind of, I told him that. And the nurse looked at me and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. After he walked out, she's like, I'm so sorry. The way he's behaving, it's totally your choice. Don't let him bully you into anything. And I told her, well, I'm not letting him bully me into anything. And I wanted to change doctors, but like I said, I was on straight Medi-Cal and I didn't know that I could switch. And I was already, I think I was over 30 weeks already. And I thought, how am I going to switch right now? I think I was a lot further along. I think I was about like 35, 34 weeks. And I thought, how am I going to switch right now? Like right now it's too late. But at the same time, it's like this doctor has never taken any of my concerns seriously. Also, they had called me. I got way too far ahead of myself. Also, at 16 weeks, that was another concern that he didn't take serious was that I started having Braxton Hicks. And so I told him, hey, I'm starting to have Braxton Hicks. It's 36 weeks. I'm sorry, it's 16 weeks. I think it's very early. And he's like, well, that happens in every pregnancy and it's not a big deal. And so then, right around 16 weeks, also, they called me and said, oh, you're gestational diabetic, so you got to be on a diet. I'm like, okay, well, that explains why I was feeling so dizzy, why I was so fatigued, why, all the other symptoms that I was feeling. And I was able to control it with diet. So it wasn't that bad because I was able to control it with diet. So once I was able to control my gestational diabetes with diet, I did get my energy back and I enjoyed my pregnancy a little bit more. However, I did also have high blood pressure. But like I said, with the diet, I was able to control both. And in my third trimester, because of the Braxton Hicks, I wasn't able to, the further along I got, the stronger they were getting. And I wasn't able to tell the difference anymore between Braxton Hicks or contractions. Because of that, I had to start going weekly to a stress test where, you would sit down, they would hook you up to the monitors and check for any contractions. And so they were recording the contractions, which were Braxton Hicks, they weren't labor. They were erratic. There was no, they weren't getting any stronger. They weren't rhythmic. They were just erratic contractions and they weren't real labor. But like I said, the further along I got, the stronger they were getting. And I couldn't tell anymore. And that led me to go to the hospital at 35 weeks with false labor. And they did give me medication to stop the labor, and I was told to be on bed rest. And then at 37 weeks, I went in again thinking, okay, this is labor because it's getting strong. And they said, no, it's false labor again, stay on your bed rest. So finally, at 38 and a half weeks pregnant, I finally did go into labor. And it just happened to be that I had a doctor's appointment, and when he checked me, I was about 3 centimeters open, and he was feeling contractions, and he could see it in my face this time. And he said, okay, I think this might be it. I want you to go to the hospital and, get checked out, and they'll call me, to come and see you in a bit. So I thought, okay, good, finally. And then that's when I finally noticed, okay, these are real contractions. These are harder, they're stronger, they're more rhythmic. They're coming every, at the time, I guess it was like every 6 minutes or something like that. So I get checked into the labor and delivery ward, and it's labor and it's progressing, and I was having my labor pains. Everything was going smoothly. I opened 5 centimeters and it got strong enough, the pains were strong enough where I did ask for an epidural. So after 6 hours, they hooked me up to the epidural. It was already in my spine and labor started to slow down. And I was looking at it and I was like, uh-oh, I've been here before. 3 times before. This is my 4th time. Labor is starting to slow down, and eventually it stopped. Now, because of the epidural was already in my spine, they decided to, wait out the night. The doctor thought, let's wait out the night, see what happens, turn off the epidural for right now. Let's see if labor starts again. It did not. There was no progress overnight. I was being checked, and every time I was checked, I was still 5 centimeters. There was no, labor, I'm sorry, there was no contractions. But my day nurse was she was very compassionate. She was very nice. She, had a great sense of humor. She had a good personality. I really liked her. But the night nurse was not. She was that type of person that this was just a job. She punched in and she couldn't wait to punch out type of person. And it was just so mundane to her. There was just lack of compassion. And and I was very frustrated because, I had been feeling all these contractions for 16 weeks, and this pregnancy was difficult. I mean, it was a high-risk pregnancy, and I was just frustrated that I just, I'm there. I want to give birth already. Let's do this, but nothing's happening. So the nurse told me that they were just waiting on doctor's orders, and I was just so frustrated, and I told her, if you guys just break my water bag, it will start. It'll start on its own. And she just looked at me and was like, I can't do that. That could be dangerous because, I can feel the baby. As she was checking me, she was telling me that she could push on the head and she would float up, and then she would come back down. And she's like, so that's very dangerous. If I were to try to pop your water bag, it would it might be dangerous that the cord might prolapse and, come out first, and then you're going to need a C-section, and that's not a good idea. And so then I started asking, okay, well, what about another doctor? Like, this doctor just pretty much left me since 6 last night, and it was like 7 a.m. the next morning. And so I was like, what about another doctor? Can I just get another doctor? I wasn't even satisfied with my first doctor, and she was just pretty much like, no, you just need to wait for your doctor. So as we're talking, she still was checking me, and she goes, whoops, I accidentally broke your bag of waters. Sorry. And she checked, and she's like, let me just check to make sure that the cord, and she checked. There was no cord prolapse, nothing like that. The head was there and the head was stable. She wasn't able to move it anymore. And she's like, well, your water bag broke. I'm gonna call your doctor now. And so she called him and she came back and she's like, okay, we're going to give you an hour. If nothing starts, then we're going to go ahead and put you on Pitocin. Hi, friends. I just wanted to pop in real quick and tell you about this amazing skincare line that I've been using. It's called Halo Skincare. Their main ingredient is the Nobel Prize winning epidural growth factor, or EGF. mixed with marine life and botanicals. Their tagline is meditation for the skin, bringing the inner glow to the face. And you know what? They're not kidding. I immediately saw a radiant glow in my face. And after 2 weeks of using their five-step routine, my pores were visibly smaller. The fine lines around my eyes were plumped and smoothed out. And there was even an improvement with my rosacea. No more flare-ups since I've been using Halo. It's cruelty-free, free of mineral oil, linoleum, or petroleum. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see the drastic difference in my eyelids. They're lifted. My skin is firmer and I have a beautiful natural glow. And I can offer you a 25% discount just for being a listener of the show. Enter the promotional code PODCAST25 and I will link in the website and the code on the show notes. Now, back to our conversation. So contractions were there, but they weren't strong enough. They were coming every 10 to 15 minutes. It wasn't rhythmic. It wasn't, they were contractions, but they weren't, real. So she came back in the room like at 9 and said, okay, your doctor said, we're going to go ahead and start you on Pitocin. And so they started me, and sure enough, it kick-started the labor again. And then she had checked me, and I was 7 centimeters. And then from that point to 30 minutes, I jumped from 7 to 10 centimeters. And when she checked me again, she's like, okay, you're 10 centimeters already. And I told her, well, I feel like I need to push. I feel pressure. And I feel like I need a push. And she said, no, your doctor's not here yet. I'm going to call him. And I looked at my husband and he looked at me, and it's like she read our minds, because she said, don't push. I don't get paid enough to deliver your baby. And as she said that, she picked up the phone. And I was like, this is unbelievable. It's 21 years apart, a different doctor, a different hospital and a different nurse. I was just told the same thing that I was told in my first birth of my son, which was, I don't get paid to deliver your baby. It was just so unbelievable. But at the time I was just like so focused on what we were doing that it was just, oh my God, like again, seriously. So she hangs up and she's like, okay, the doctor's here. He's just going to come up. And within 5 minutes, the room was full of staff. Because it was a high-risk pregnancy, there was like 9 extra people. I had my doctor, I had 2 nurses, and then it was a pediatrician, 2 nurses for that pediatrician, and then a crash team of 3. So because of the high blood pressure and the gestational diabetes and I guess all the other problems, they were just worried that there was going to be problems with the baby's birth. And at that point, I was already like 23 hours in labor. So, or at least there at the hospital. So they were ready for it. So finally, I was able to push. And with 3 pushes, she was born. Emily Megan Moss was born 6 pounds, 9 ounces at 11:08 a.m. And she was healthy. So there was no need for all that crash team. There was no need for all those, people. They just turned around. They kind of like turned around and looked at us like, what a waste of time for their, resources. But, it's not like I ordered them. But she was perfectly healthy. She's perfectly fine. And for the first, I think, like hour of her life, her name was Amy, because I wanted to name her Amy. And when my parents came in with Sophia, everybody took a vote. Nobody liked the name Amy. So everybody took a vote and said, no, we like Emily better. And so that's what happened. I changed her name to Emily instead. And by the way, Leah, she was 17 already, and she was in the room, in the delivery room. She recorded everything. She took pictures. She was there for it. And when Sophia came in to see the baby, she was so cute. She was so excited. She climbed up, and she's like, oh, my God, she's so beautiful, and she's so little. And she said in her cute little voice, she goes, Mommy, can I hold her? I promise I'll be very gentle. And I was like, oh, yes, you can hold her. And my husband's like, no, you can't hold her yet. Hold on. And he set her up. Well, he did. He let her hold her. And we have a lot of pictures. And it was just beautiful. So I was in the hospital for a total of 4 days, the day before, the day of the birth, and then I wanted to take as much time as I could in the hospital to recover. And so that allowed me an extra 2 days, so a total of 4 days. And so while I was there, the baby was nursing every 2 hours. I thought she latched on good. And so we were, nursing every 2 hours. She was wetting diapers. She had already done her, what's that black tarry poop? I never can remember the name right. I honestly can't pronounce it. But anyways, it was that black tarry poop that she had already had. So everything was going fine. And so after 24 hours, the nurse had asked me if I wanted to give the baby the vitamin K and the hep B vaccine. And the first time that she asked me, I told her, "Well, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if I should do that right now. You know, her she's kind of small. The pregnancy was difficult. It was considered high risk. So I don't know if I want to do that right now." And she said, "Okay, I'll come back later and I'll ask you later." And so she waited until the evening and came back and asked me again. And I'm like, "You know what? I don't know because I'm just not sure if I should do that. She's just so little." And she said, "Well, you know, m almost every parent does." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, what happens if I don't?" And she said, "Well, then your baby will go home unprotected." And I thought, "Oh, okay. Well, I don't want my baby to be unprotected. So, okay, go ahead and do it." And, honestly, I didn't look into it at all. I just trusted that they were right. I trusted the doctors, I trusted the nurses, I trusted the CDC schedule, and I said, "Okay, you know what? Go ahead, do it." And so she took her and she came back and she was already all swaddled and she put her in her little bassinet and I thought everything was fine. And it was around 2 hours already and I thought, okay, well, it's time to nurse. So I went to go pick her up to try to nurse her and she wasn't waking up. So I thought, okay, well, let me take off all the blankets. She still wasn't waking up, and I thought, "Huh, that's weird." And at the time, my nurse was in the room, and she was asking me questions. And so she saw that I was like trying to get her to wake up, and she's like, "Oh, she's not waking up." And I'm like, "Well, no, it's already been 2 hours, a little bit longer than 2 hours since the last time she nursed." So, she said, "Okay, well, here's a wet washcloth. Try rubbing that on her and see if she'll wake up." And she was responding to the stimuli. She was like moving up, like she was responding to it, but she just wasn't waking up. And so then she took her and she started tapping on the bottom of the soles of her feet to try to get her to wake up. And she would respond to that too. She would lift up her leg, but she just wasn't waking up. And we thought, okay, well, that's weird. So she said, "Put her on your breast and, see what happens." And she just wasn't taking it. She just wasn't, latching. So we thought, okay, well, let's put her down and we'll try again later. Maybe she's just really tired. So we put her down, swaddled her up again, checked the diaper, everything. She just wasn't waking up. And so we put her down and I waited another hour. It was 3 hours later. And I tried doing all that again and she wasn't waking up. And I thought, this is weird. And so at that time, her nurse came in and asked me like, "Oh, how's the baby doing? Is she wetting? Is she, how many times have you changed her diaper? How many times have you fed her?" So I told her, "Well, it's been a little bit over 3 hours and she's just not waking up." And she thought, "Okay, well, let's try this." And so she tried all the same things and nothing was happening. And so I started getting worried, like, "Well, why isn't she waking up?" So she checked her out and she, thought that she had jaundice, so she told me she was going to take her to go check her out. And then she came back and she said, "Yes, the baby has jaundice. We're going to go ahead and put her under these lights. And when she wakes up, go ahead and feed her." And I thought, okay, so I left her in there again. I waited another hour and then, and that was it. I was going crazy because this is a newborn and she's supposed to be feeding every 2 hours. And at this point, if she's not feeding, she's also not wetting. So I started like flipping out because it was already almost 5 hours. And so I got her out. I was trying to feed her again. She wasn't waking up. And my nurse was in the room, and so was the baby's nurse. So I had two nurses in the room. And my nurse seemed very concerned and was telling her, "Yeah, she was nursing every 2 hours. She was doing fine." And, then they took her, and now she's not waking up. And The baby's nurse kind of looked at her, like gave her like a that kind of look, like shut up type of look. And so that only made me even more nervous, like, okay, what's happening? Like, this isn't normal. This is my fourth baby. I know how babies are. She should be waking up and feeding and crying and doing something. And it was like 6 hours later that I just couldn't take it. And I got her naked. I got her completely naked. I took off the diaper. I wiped her down. I did everything. And I tried to feed her. And finally, the nurse said, you know what, let's just, because she has jaundice, let's just try pumping your breast. And we're going to go ahead and give her formula because she needs the extra calories and she needs, to bring down the jaundice. And so they just, as she was asleep, they shoved the nipple, the bottle in her mouth and stimulated her jaw, and she kind of started sucking a little bit, but because it's a bottle, so it was dripping in, she was able to eat a little bit. But at this point she had already lost weight, and it was a concern because she had already lost weight at that point. So 6 hours later, she was finally, starting to wake up and get out of it. And but because she had lost weight, they were insisting that I give her formula as well as breastfeed. And then she wasn't strong at that point. She wasn't strong enough anymore to latch on. And they said, well, maybe she got used to the bottle after, two feeds. I thought, okay, I need her to get used to the breast again because she was doing just fine. So they did call a lactation consultant in for me, and so she checked her out, and she was just telling me that, she doesn't think that the baby's jaw was strong enough, and we'll continue to keep latching, and in the meantime, latch on the breast and also supplement with the bottle because of the jaundice. And so that worked out. Like, we, they were trying to help me, and so that's how that day went. And then the next day I was released. So I went home and I called my own lactation consultant. She came over, I think, on day five or something like that. And so she assessed her, and throughout the course, I think the baby must have been about, I don't know, 3 weeks along when the lactation consultant discovered that she was tongue-tied, and it was a posterior tongue tie. And I went to my pediatrician, I told her about it, and she's like, oh, don't worry about it, she'll grow out of it, we're not going to do anything about that right now because she's a baby. And but because of that, it was painful to breastfeed each and every time. And so I just had to continue with, formula feeding 3 times a day and breastfeeding. So I did that the whole time, her entire breastfeeding journey. So as a newborn, she was pretty normal. Everything got right back on track. Once we were home, she was, pooping the yellow mustard poop, and she was wetting enough diapers. I think I was changing her like 8 times a day. And, she was feeding a lot though, because I think it was because of the tongue tie. She just couldn't get enough. So that's why I had to supplement with formula 3 times a day as well. And Sophia was 4 at the time that Emily was born, and she did really good. She accepted the baby as her baby sister. She was super excited to be with her, but she did get jealous, in the sense that I just wasn't able to give her enough attention, and her dad gave her a lot of attention. It seemed like she was excited about the baby sister, and she was glad that dad was there to give her the attention, and so was Leah. But she kind of never forgave me for having another baby. But she was very excited to be very involved with Emily. So that was our newborn stage. We were just, everything was going normal. She was a baby that ate every 2 to 3 hours. I, was changing her diapers. Everything was working out. And so, of course, I took her into her 2-month well baby check. And she got all her, shots, and everything, as far as I was concerned, worked out. But she did started sleeping a lot again after that night. And I still gave her her feedings, and she slept through her feedings. She didn't wake up. She slept through her feedings. She slept through her diaper changes. She just slept through it all. And then the next morning, she seemed to be fine. And then later on the next day, she hated the car seat. For some reason, she just did not like car rides and she hated her car seat. And when I was on my way to pick up, or I was on my way home after I had already picked up Sophia and Leah from school, she just started, crying. And I thought, okay, well, we're almost home. We're only 10 minutes away, so we're almost home. And then she started like screaming, like this high-pitched scream. It was like she was in pain. And I was like, what is going on? That I actually told Leah, Leah, jump in the back, go check and see what's going on with the baby. We're not that far away from home. We're very close. We're just a few minutes away. And so Leah jumped from the front seat to the back seat to see what was going on with the baby. And she's told me, oh my God, mommy, the baby is covered in sweat. She's so hot. And I thought, oh wow, okay, well, she was born in May and it was hot. And so I told her, like try to calm her down, like we're almost home, we're almost home. And she was just screaming and screaming that I told her, you know what? Screw it. Take her out of the car seat and console her. And so she took her out and she was just sweating and she was arching her back and there was just no consoling her. And I thought, okay, well, I guess, she must have gotten too hot. Should we waited too long? We're finally home and I parked and I grabbed her and I tried to console her. I put her at the breast and she just could not stop crying. And even at the breast, she would, be eating and then she would cry and she'd be eating and then she would cry. And it was just, there was no consoling her for hours it went on. So that night was pretty rough. It just, like I said, went on for hours and she finally was able to calm down where she did fall asleep and get back into her routine and everything seemed normal again the next day. So I did a lot of baby wrapping and a lot of baby wearing and carrying, and I had a soft wrap called the Happy Baby, and I had a soft structured carrier called the Lily Baby Complete. And I loved using that stuff, the carriers, because she just was a very needy baby that, I constantly had to be feeding her, and she didn't want me to put her down. She didn't feel very comfortable. She hated her car seat. She hated car rides, and she was just so needy. So I really depended on the carriers, and I really depended on everybody else to help me with Sophia because, all my attention was on Emily. So at her 4 month well baby check, I went back and she was gaining weight. She was doing fine. Everything was going great, normal. And so she had, her full vaccines again. And the next day, or actually that night, she vomited and she had diarrhea. And I thought, oh, okay. And then the next day, she was vomiting and having diarrhea again. And so I called the doctor to tell her, hey, she's, I was telling her what was going on. And she asked me, well, does she have a fever? And I said, well, no, no fever, but, I'm concerned that she's vomited and had diarrhea several times already. And so she said, okay, well, bring her in, in 2 days. And so I brought her in, and again, she was still having diarrhea and vomiting. She's like, well, baby spit up. And I said, no. This isn't spit up. Like, I know the difference. This is vomiting. She's vomiting everything that I'm giving her. And at that time, I kept her on the breast because she was hungry. She would vomit and she was hungry. So I would put her on and she was having diarrhea and she was having blowouts. Now, I mean, I was changing her diarrhea like 13 times in a 24-hour period. And vomiting was, I didn't keep track because I had a baby tracker, but I couldn't keep track. But she was vomiting just as many times as she was having diarrhea. And when the doctor checked her out, she said, oh, okay, yes, this is a reaction to the rotavirus vaccine. And she said, give her Pedialyte. Don't give her water. She can't handle the electrolytes. And, keep feeding her every time she throws up. Give her like an ounce of Pedialyte. And I'm like, she throws up like 13 times a day, But so that's what I did. I took her home. And when she said that, I finally thought, well, this isn't right. She shouldn't have this kind of a reaction to something that's supposed to protect her from that. And so at that point, I was just so busy trying to keep her hydrated and keep her out of the hospital because this was enough to land her in the hospital. And I'm telling you that she had diarrhea and vomiting 13 times a day in a 24-hour period for 7 weeks. And the only way that I kept her out of the hospital was because I had her on the breast like 20 hours a day. No joke. Like, as soon as she would throw up, I'd give her, the breast, I'd give her formula, I'd give her Pedialyte. I was constantly replacing everything that she was throwing up. Now, during that time, she again started having that high-pitched scream. She would get really red, very sweaty, and I thought, she hate, and I kept thinking she hates the car seat. She hates the car rides, and it's very hot, and I'm trying to figure out a way to keep her cool. And she was just it was heartbreaking because she was in pain, and I didn't know exactly what was the cause of it, and I kept thinking it was the car seat. So after the 7 weeks, I took her back to the doctor at 6 months. And I told her, okay, she finally, it's been a week. She's not vomiting. She's not having diarrhea anymore. Everything seems to be going back to normal. By the way, I do have to give credit to somebody that on my Instagram, I was complaining about it. And someone reached out to me on Instagram and said, well, are you giving her probiotics? And I thought, well, no, I don't know what that is. And so she gave me a link and I looked into it and I started giving her probiotic in her bottle. Sure enough, like within 2 days, it like that's what helped her. She stopped having vomiting or diarrhea, and so a whole week of that, she started doing better. So at the 6 months well visit, the doctor said, "Okay, well, let's give her the 6 months." And I asked her, like, said, "Wait a minute, if she had this kind of reaction, at her 4 months, is it a good idea to do it at the 6 months?" And she said, "Oh yeah, she's fine. You said that she's done, right?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, but it's only been 1 week." And she said, "Oh no, she'll be fine." And I thought, "Oh, okay, doctor knows best." And I let her give her the immunizations again, and this time, instead of having diarrhea and vomiting, she got constipated all the time. So I really relied on the probiotics to get her regular again. And at that point, I decided, you know what? Something inside me keeps screaming no. And I got to start listening to my mother's intuition. And I got the book, the vaccine book by Dr. Sears, and I read it. And I came to my conclusion that, some babies can handle vaccines and some babies can't. And I decided at that point that, no more for Emily. That's it. Now, the thing with Emily is that she was a high needs baby. If you don't know what a high needs baby is, I suggest you Google it. But pretty much it means that, she cried a lot. She needed to be held. She demanded attention. It was, she was only 6 months, but she was like demanding attention. She would throw her little baby tantrums and she wanted to be held. I couldn't put her down. Nobody could put her down. And the weird thing was that she wanted to be held, but she didn't want to be close. I don't know how to explain it other than, when you pick up your baby and you put them on your hip, and they lean back, and then so you put your arm behind their back so that you can hold them in. She would put her both her hands, stretch them out against my chest just so that she could be backed up enough. So I thought, okay, well, does she want me to put her down? So I would put her down and she would start screaming and crying. So I would pick her up and again she would like push me away. And I thought, well, this doesn't make sense. Like, this kind of hurts. Like, how is it not hurting her? So then I would put her in the wrap, or I would put her in the carrier, and she would do the same thing. And then when I was breastfeeding her, she would do the same thing. She would stretch out her hands to push me away, yet she still wanted me to hold her, but she just didn't want to be close. It was funny. I know I had mentioned this in a previous podcast as well. People would make comments, as to
why is this baby not laughing? You know, they try and make goo-goo faces at her, and she would just look at them and or look away. She would refuse to make eye contact, and she just wasn't laughing. She just wasn't a happy baby, unless it was just like with me, like specifically with me, with Sophia, and you know, with not even with her dad. Her dad was even upset that, you know, he's like, oh, she doesn't even like me. And it's like, she's a baby. You know, she sees me and she sees food. So, and then she sees Sophia and she sees a playmate. So when she started eating, I started her off with avocado. Because I was a stay-at-home mom at that point, I really researched organic foods and how to make homemade baby food and what foods were the best to start with. And I heard that, or I read that, the avocado had a lot of good fat for the brain development. So I started her off on that. And like I said, I made all her baby food and I really enjoyed doing that. But like I said, she really did throw a lot of baby tantrums. And, you know, a lot of the times I was really scared because she would throw herself back. And, you know, she wasn't even a year old yet and she would be slamming herself down. And it got me really worried. So I would just make sure that when she would throw her little tantrums, I would put her down and just let her have it. Like, you know, because I just wanted to make sure that she wasn't going to hurt herself, because I could never sit her down on her crib and leave her in her crib because she would just launch herself back and she would hurt her head a lot. So I would just put her down on the floor, you know, a carpeted floor, and just let her have her tantrum until she was finally done. I could pick her up. And in one of those, I happened to be in the bank and I was sitting down, and there was this chair that had a piece of cloth over the armrest, but it wasn't padded. Well, she started having a fit. I don't know what it was. It was like 2 weeks before her birthday. And she just started like flailing around and slammed her face into the armrest, and her nose looked broken. It bled a little bit. And I thought, oh my God, she broke her nose. I made a big old scene, and my husband came over and he's like, she can't break her nose. She's a baby. You know, it's cartilage. It'll be fine. I'm like, no, don't you see that little bump on her nose? Like, it's broken. And she still has a bump on her nose. On the side, not on the bridge of her nose, but on the side of her nose. And that was because she had thrown a big fit. So I always had her in my arms. I was always holding her. I had to attend to her. And because of that, during the time we had moved from Lakewood, we had moved all the way to Paris to Riverside County. And she was just such a high needs baby. I really couldn't do anything. I really couldn't even, you know, I could barely cook. I could barely eat for myself. I couldn't clean. I could do everything that I could for Sophia. But during that time, my husband had to hire somebody to come and clean, because I couldn't do it. All my time was on Emily. That's all I had time for. Now, as Emily got older, she was very attached to me, but then she finally started doing independent play. You know, I would lay out all her toys and she would start playing with her toys, and she would give me enough time to start making myself something to eat, right? And at the time I thought, you know what, I really need to lose weight. You know, I gained all this baby weight. You know, I've gained 30 pounds since I met my husband after having all his babies. And I thought, you know, I really want to lose weight. And so I started making green smoothies. I started really, you know, taking care of my health. And, you know, I had a lot of back pain. So I started taking Epsom salts, baths. And because she was so attached to me, she would eat and drink everything I was eating and drinking. And if I was going to take a bath, she was going to be in the bath with me. And I didn't even know it at the time. Because I was taking spirulina and I was taking chlorella and all these supplements, she was eating them too, and it was okay for her to eat them. Well, I didn't know that that was part of detoxifying from heavy metals, and I had no idea that I was accidentally doing it. And I was still giving her probiotics because she needed it. She had a hard time with constipation for years.
And so I was still giving it to her, and I didn't know that all that was helping her. I just knew that I was starting to see a big improvement in her and her attitude and her behavior, in her neediness. I thought, wow, this is great. You know, she's really responding to all this. And then I find out I'm pregnant with baby number five with Grace. And so during this time, Emily was still breastfeeding. I breastfed her up until she was 2 years old. And the only reason why I stopped breastfeeding her at 2 years old, it was because I was already 8 months pregnant with Grace. And it was just too much. I didn't know what was happening, but as soon as she would get on me, she would start kicking me. And it was just, I was just feeling so like my skin was crawling, like when she would climb up on me. And you know, this is a baby that I absolutely love. So for my skin to be crawling when she would touch me, I was like, I don't even know what's going on. I can't have you on me anymore. You're kicking me. You know, you're so high needs. I had to, by the way, she co-slept. I year at 1 year old when we moved, she just did not do well during the move. So she ended up co-sleeping with us for a whole year. And during that time, I was just so touched out. I just didn't want her on me anymore. I felt like, you know, my body was not my own for 3 years at that point because I was pregnant and then I was breastfeeding and I was pregnant and breastfeeding. And then soon there was going to be another baby that was going to be breastfeeding. And I thought, I got to get her off of me. It just so happened to be that at 8 months, by the way, I found out what that was. I found out that it was called breastfeeding aversion. I didn't even know what that was until afterwards, but it's breastfeeding aversion whenever you feel that you can't breastfeed anymore because it makes your skin crawl and it makes you angry now. But anyways, at 8 months, my husband and I, we knew that we were going to have another baby soon, and we thought, you know what, why don't we do our baby moon, you know, and get away before the baby comes. And so we decided to go to New Orleans, and at that time I thought, this is the perfect time because we're going to leave the kids with my parents and we're going to go away all on our own, you know, and have this baby moon all to ourselves. And this is the perfect time to wean her off of me, off of breastfeeding, and wean her off of sleeping on our bed. She needs to start going to her own bed. So for that whole week, she was without. And so when I came back, I just wanted to keep that as a routine because she loves routines. That's another thing about my little baby. She needs routines. And so with this disruption in her normal routine, when I came back, I wanted to make sure she had a new routine. And that's how I did it. I just refused. I cold turkey her. I refused to give her any breast milk or breast. And I refused to breastfeed her to bed. And she had to sleep in her own little bed, her toddler bed. And I would cuddle her to sleep. And sometimes I'd be in there for so long that I would fall asleep, and then I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd have to get up and get out of bed. And so that's how I did it. I had to do that at age two, and 2 months later, the next baby was born. So when the next baby was born, Emily, I was really worried that she just wasn't going to be able to make that transition. I thought that she was going to be, you know, very difficult, and it was for the first 2 weeks, but then afterwards, she started realizing, like, okay, new baby needs more attention. And as soon as I would put the new baby down, she would think, okay, it's my turn, I get mommy. And she would come to me and she would hug me, and she needs affection. And so she would hug me, and she would we would eat and we'd have our little playtime together. And I did have to protect Grace a lot from Emily because Emily's a rough player and she doesn't realize that the baby is so fragile. She turned out to be pretty good. It turned out to be a really good relationship. They're best of friends right now. And you know what? I forgot to mention that during my pregnancy with Gracie, I was seeing a chiropractor, and I started letting Emily see the chiropractor too. And then I started seeing a lot of improvement in her behavior with that too. And well, she needed it because she had had a couple of falls, and so that's why I had her start seeing the chiropractor, which she still sees her to today. So she went from a high needs baby to a high needs toddler, and now that she's five, she's just
really good. She's a very independent baby. I'm sorry, toddler. Well, actually, she's not a toddler anymore, right? She's school aged. And she has a very high vocabulary. That is one thing that they've noticed that, when she first started preschool, they noticed that, oh, wow, she has a really high vocabulary. She knows how to talk. She knows how to communicate her wants and her needs and her dislikes. And she does really well. She gets along really well with other kids, which was another one of my concerns. But she does get along very well with all the other kids. And she's just the sweetest child. If you meet her in person, she will talk your little ear off. She will compliment you. She wants you to know everything that she knows and what she can do. And she's super excited about her birthday being today. And I'm just so glad that I was able to talk about my experience with Emily. And with that is the end of the Mom of a High Needs Baby chapter. However, it'll never be the end of the Emily chapter because she is quite the character in our family.